Good morning, Bloomington. Hour number two of the Glass in the Morning radio program. Big Show Friday, January 22nd, 2016. Thank you for being with us this morning. It's nice to look out and not see the snow-covered streets or people freezing because of bad wind chills. That was the earlier part of the week. Now, 23 to get things started at 8:07 sounds downright hot. 23 does feel like 12. The wind picks up today. It'll be blowing out of the north-northeast at 20 miles an hour. 28 in clouds today, 21 in clouds tonight. 20% chance of some snow flurries, but accumulation doesn't seem to be on the card, so let's not worry about that too much. Saturday, partly cloudy, 0% chance of precipitation as well. Sunday, pushing 40, 42 on Monday, but a 50% chance of rain. A week from today, we look at temperatures in the 50s. Well, why not close out January in the 50s? That would make sense, wouldn't it? It is Indiana. Stick around for a couple days if you don't like it, and we can change things up. The January average highs and lows are 37 and 20, so if you want an idea of where we are right now, yeah, after 5 days, it'll be right around that as an average. We are not Washington, D.C. We are not the Jersey Shore. We are not New York City. We are not even the middle of Kentucky. Boy, I saw a tweet from a Louisville radio station, 8 to 12 inches east of Frankfort and in and around there. My goodness, that storm will be interesting. 2 feet expected in Washington, D.C., 2 feet expected in Roanoke and Charlottesville. So we'll see how this pushes through. I guess the good news, I think it's on a weekend, so people can be home. You don't have to worry about getting to work and school and government and everything else. So that's what we'll be watching over the weekend. But the good news here in boring old Bloomington, nothing of that to worry about. We had our fun earlier in the week. Updated forecast, live radar, find it all at WGCLradio.com. We're brought to you this morning by J&S Locksmith, where you'll find everything for the residential or commercial outdoor technician. J&S Locksmith, 508 West 17th Street, right here in Bloomington. And on the telephone with us this morning is our good friend from the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for the men's basketball program and football program at Indiana University. Zach Osterman joins us here on a Big Show Friday. Zach, good morning. How are you?
I'm just glad we're dodging that stuff out east, man. I think they're getting more of that back home in Atlanta than we're getting it here.
Exactly right, and that's fine because 1 inch of snow down there will shut down that city as well, just like it did.
1 inch didn't even take an inch of snow. It takes the threat of a quarter inch of snow. The number of days I had off from high school for the possibility of snow. I mean, we're talking maybe a half dozen.
The forecast is more frightening than the reality.
It was fantastic.
And I bet you're glad you're not heading to Rutgers this weekend for basketball. You will be right here at the Assembly Hall tomorrow noon as the Hoosiers welcome the Road Warriors of Northwestern to town. The Wildcats have had a very interesting season. They've been off to one of their best starts in program history. They have 4 true road wins on the year, which not a lot of teams can talk about, at least here in January. They gave Maryland everything they wanted on Tuesday night after the Indiana game, losing in overtime to the Terrapins in College Park. This is Indiana's best test of the Big Ten season to this point, true or false?
It might be, certainly. I mean, especially when you consider just how bad, frankly, the 3 teams they've played on the road have turned out to be so far. You know, Northwestern, obviously, people around here are probably pretty familiar with Brian McIntosh, who played at Greensburg. You know, Chris Collins, this is his third year. You get the sense that he's really kind of got both arms around the program in terms of his system and the way he wants guys to play. Alex Ola is getting healthier. I think we're going to find out, and Indiana fans obviously will hope he doesn't play because they can remember him putting up some tough numbers against him. But I think we're going to find out whether or not he is fully ready. But, yeah, I mean, this is a Northwestern team that they won by 25 in Minnesota where Indiana struggled. They beat Wisconsin at home. They're still kind of coming through, and you know, is this the year for the NCAA tournament? Well, I don't know. When you lose at home to Penn State, that's not the most ideal result. But
you don't want that as a tiebreaker.
They are a tough out, and as you said, they are clearly not fazed by going on the road in tough environments.
And Northwestern, noon tomorrow, ESPN. You Indiana fans will remember Trey Demps from a few years ago as well, made his name coming off the bench to take Northwestern to a 50-something to 50-something victory over Indiana at Assembly Hall. Jeez, that one sticks in your craw. The interesting thing about Alex Ola will be that will be probably Thomas Bryant's most interesting matchup yet. Not a big post presence for Minnesota. The guys at Ohio State were young. The kid at Illinois the other night was young. Wisconsin has Happ, who's a freshman. But Ola, he's on the Pat Graham plan. He's been around since 1997. He's been there 14 years. He knows all the tricks. He knows all the trades. How many minutes is that going to be a factor in tomorrow's game?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the big thing. I mean, he's coming back from, I forget exactly what the injury is, but he's been, I mean, it's been something he's been fighting for a while. And, I mean, you're right. I do think that if he can play significant minutes, then this is probably Bryant's toughest test, at least of the Big Ten season so far. And I certainly would make the case that Bryant has been coming along. But at the same time, I mean, Ola was 0-5 against Maryland. He came off the bench. He didn't score a single point in that game. He had one rebound. So, you know, I mean, at what point do you kind of say, yeah, this is going to be a test, but how ready is Ola really going to be to push Thomas Bryant? He did not start at Maryland. I mean, if you're Indiana, if anything, I think you almost want Bryant to be the one pushing or testing Ola anytime he gets in the game. And not just Bryant, but Max Bielfeld, too, who's obviously been playing very well in Big Ten play thus far.
Yeah, a little safety in numbers up there will give him a little bit of a run out, and what kind of shape he's in is interesting. But as Northwestern goes, it's their backcourt. You mentioned Bryant McIntosh. Pretty solid player, and Trey Dempsey has been around forever as well. The Northwestern team, you saw blow out Minnesota at Minnesota. Indiana couldn't make that claim. You've seen them play tough on the road. What's going to give Indiana problems tomorrow? What's going to be the toughest thing they need to overcome to stay perfect in league play?
I mean, I think the big thing Indiana needs to do against teams like this is a little bit of what it's done in, frankly, its last two home games, which is just, even without James Blackmon Jr., if you're Indiana, you have the capacity to score big, especially at home where, I mean, teams always tend to shoot better at home, or I would say always.
Yeah, they're comfortable.
It's a general rule. They tend to shoot better at home. They tend to score more at home. And if you're Indiana, you can score a lot more at home. Northwestern's a good team. They're tough defensively in some respects, but I don't think they really at all have the horses to keep up with. You know, if Indiana starts pushing 40-point halves or, you know, 80, 75, 80, 85
you know, that, points. That's an interesting point. We're talking with Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, at Zach Osterman. Indiana has a lot of horses, a lot more horses than a lot of teams do in the Big Ten. Why is it? Is it just the home court advantage where you see them play like 48-18 against Ohio State, or they score 61 second-half points against Illinois? I know it's not easy to do on the road, but the night and day differences of the Minnesota game on Saturday last and Illinois on Tuesday, just 3 days later, I mean, those were two different worlds. Is the Indiana still battling a little bit of inconsistency?
Probably a little bit. And I'll also say I'm never going to fault a team for shooting poorly at Williams Arena. That's a funky place to play, and we have seen far better Indiana teams go up there and struggle. You know, I would argue that they've played one probably really, really good road half this year, that being the second half at Nebraska when they
right.
did kind of look like that team. They outscored the Huskers by 13 in that half, which, I mean, you know, plus 13 in any half on the road in the Big Ten is going to be good news if you're, frankly, any team. But I think probably Indiana. I mean, and that's a sign of a team that's, as you said, probably still a little inconsistent. I don't think it's that uncommon, really, though, for a team to be that much, maybe not quite that much better at home, that they're breaking 100 points against Illinois, but just to be more confident, more comfortable at home. You know, Indiana's a rhythm team offensively. They shoot the ball really well. They want to get out and transition and run really well. The more comfortable they feel in their surroundings, you would imagine, the better they're going to perform. And so far, that has been certainly the case in Big Ten play, and a little bit even in non-conference if you look at, you know, absent that furious comeback against Notre Dame.
Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He's the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star for Indiana men's basketball and football. We'll get to a little football here in a minute. At Zach Osterman on Twitter. The straw that stirs the drink. It looks like two straws on his jersey, 1-1. Hoosiers have won 11 in a row. Number 11's the all-time assist leader. And in conference play, he has not taken one night off. I can't say that about his teammates. Stress the importance of his senior point guard playing in the Big Ten for his fourth consecutive year.
Yeah, I mean, this is the sixth season of basketball I've watched Yogi Ferrell play, if you don't count even just the AAU stuff. But even going back to, you know, his junior year at Park Tudor, we obviously covered that because he was a committed senior year and then through to college. And even relative to his competition or, you know, the expectations placed on him or whatever it may be, this is the best basketball I've ever seen Yogi Ferrell play. And again, that's not even... Obviously, sure it is, right? Because he's averaging like 20 points and 6 assists a game. And as you said, he hadn't taken a night off in Big Ten play and all that. But what I mean is, even relative to what's expected of him, where he is, the competition he's facing, this is the best basketball I've ever seen him play. He is, I mean, he's getting contributions from guys around him. I don't want to take it away, but you know, Tom Crean said something. He said, you know, it's up to Yogi sometimes to figure out how to get other guys through slumps or how to work other guys through the obstacles that teams can put in front of them because he's the point guard. He's the creator. He's the guy that steers the offense. He's doing that. I mean, it's not just that he's scoring, and he's obviously shooting very well. His assist numbers, his rebound numbers are really good. Rebound numbers are an underrated thing for him because when Yogi Ferrell rebounds the ball, the break is basically on immediately.
My favorite.
Thomas Bryant rebounds it, he has to hand it off to Yogi Ferrell before the break is on.
My favorite Yogi Ferrell numbers are the closeout numbers here in January. He took the game over in the final minutes against Wisconsin, or the final minute against Wisconsin, hit a jumper, made all his foul shots, did the same at Minnesota. So when the games have been tight, that's exactly what you want out of your senior point guard. And that's Indiana's huge advantage when you have your main ball handler as big, as tough, big meaning heart, tough meaning physically strong and experienced, and shoots 88% from the free throw line. That's a game killer. So if the Hoosiers are in close games and people wonder, well, how are they going to handle them? They just blow everybody out. Well, throw the ball to Ferrell and get out of his way.
I mean, I think it was Chris Collins who may have said somewhere yesterday that Yogi Ferrell and Jared Utah are the two best players in the league right now. I can't argue with that. I mean, I know people got really excited about Denzel Valentine, and I understand why. He had some great performances in the non-conference, and I think he's still probably playing well.
Yeah.
He's obviously been injured.
Have some knee surgery. See how that goes.
An absolute mess right now.
They're a hot mess.
But, I mean, there is nobody playing better basketball. There might be somebody playing as well, but there's nobody playing better basketball in the Big Ten right now than Yogi Ferrell.
And right now is a very important comment because 6 games in, that's 1/3 of the season. This isn't the halfway point or the 3-quarter pole. It's 1/3 of the way in. How much of Indiana's record is a product of their schedule and, quote-unquote, maybe a down Big Ten this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a product of their schedule. I mean, you don't have. I think you have to give some respect to any team that puts up 100 points on Illinois. I mean, I know Illinois looks totally disinterested in that game, but I believe I saw a statistic that they hadn't given up 100 in regulation since 1991. Ironically, also to Indiana. Any team that can blow out Ohio State the way they did, any team that just takes care of business. I mean, frankly, you've seen Purdue lose to Illinois. We obviously just mentioned Michigan State. The only other team that really, I guess you'd say a little bit, Maryland and obviously Iowa, everywhere else in the league, people are still figuring stuff out. People are still sort of working their way through some problems and you're seeing teams get upset. The best thing Indiana can do right now is just not give anybody anything to talk about, and that's what they're doing. Other than,
they're doing their job. It's hard to argue with.
Holy crap, 103 points in a Big Ten game with no overtime. You know, the thing I've said about the league, is it as strong as it's ever been? No, absolutely not. But people say, the league is down. It's going to hurt in February. It's going to hurt in March. It's going to hurt on Selection Sunday. We don't know that because maybe Indiana and Iowa, for example, will come back to earth a little bit on the back half of the schedule. But what if they don't? I mean, what if Iowa finishes
15-2? Absolutely.
And Indiana finishes 15-3? Well, then the league's not down so much as...
I'll tell you what, though.
The best teams in the league just turned out to be not the teams we expected. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. We're talking Hoosier Hoops. And the one interesting part of this is, and I've opined this, and I will stick by this opinion, after Iowa plays Purdue on Sunday at 1 o'clock, the first seven Hawkeye games are double-dip Michigan State, double-dip Purdue. They've had Michigan, Nebraska, and I'm forgetting one other game in there. But the point is, they've survived. Indiana isn't hurt, beaten up, or anything else. They're beating teams by – they're beating Ohio State at home, cruising, not having to bust 40 minutes. They've beat Illinois' doors off, scoring 61 points. Indiana has set themselves up for a really good second half, and where that schedule does get harder, Iowa, again, they've taken some punches already. You have to like Indiana's position in the league right now.
Well, and that's a good point, because I think people tend to look at Indiana, and I understand the skepticism, and it really makes...
Yeah, when half of your wins are against teams that are currently 1-17, you're allowed to be skeptical. I think that's fair.
No, definitely, and I understand where it comes from, and it may prove to be valid, but I think everybody looks... I think that's a fair point you make, because I think everybody looks at this start, and they say, well, they're going to get a wake-up call, you know, they're going to come back to Earth, they're going to be forced back to Earth once the schedule gets tougher. Well, what if we get to February and March, and Indiana's just a lot fresher because they've been able to play some of these. It was noticeable to me, for example, in Illinois, Tom Crean, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but he wasn't playing guys as much as he usually has.
Even Yogi got 5 minutes off. Yogi only played 31 minutes. That's a miracle. That never happens.
Yeah, he played 35 or more minutes a night in every Big Ten game to that point. And again, it's like, what if Indiana hits that back half just fresher than everybody else, and that's an advantage? Because I tell you something, you're right about Iowa, but I mean, you look at like Purdue. Purdue's got a rougher back half of the schedule than Indiana does. We can have a larger discussion someday about whether or not this unbalanced scheduling thing for the Big Ten needs to be reexamined in some form, because it is creating these very strange schedules where, like, Iowa's got to play everybody up front and Indiana's
yes.
got to play everybody at
but,
the
but
back.
But I think that goes to your point. I think that goes to your point. Everybody up front, maybe Michigan State finishes 9-7 or 9-9 and falls apart. You don't know. I think that's the beauty of it. It would be nice if you had a schedule where everybody played the same schedule. But as you mentioned, some guys are hurt at the beginning of the year. Some guys aren't fresh at the end of the year. There's never a true everybody plays the same schedule. So I think you just take the luck. And I'm not saying Indiana's lucky here, but if they made their schedule out, here it is. It's home and home Iowa. It's home Purdue, home Maryland, and at Michigan State. I don't think you could write that down any better.
Yeah. No, I mean, it, again, and I don't know how you do it, because the other thing, I mean, if you want everybody to play the same round-robin schedule at the 26-game conference schedule, that's
not
going to
work. No, it's not.
And there is no interest in the Big Ten, I don't think, in going to divisional play so that you would have some.
Not until they go to 16 teams, right?
Twice every year. Well, I'm just not sure it exists at all, frankly.
Well, and the other thing they need to...
It's obviously helpful in football.
The other thing they need to do, they need to protect the rivalries in basketball, because there are some... Just to say it's a football deal only, just stop. Indiana's got to play Purdue twice every year. Don't forget about the fans. We pay the money. We pay the cable fees. We pay the ticket prices. Please give us matchups we want to watch. It's not hard.
It's interesting. Jim Delaney said at Big Ten Media Day.
Jim Delaney gets a 20% raise every year because we pay for the Big Ten Network. Don't forget that, Jim.
There's not widespread interest in protecting rivalries, which obviously that interest doesn't extend to Bloomington.
Well, it doesn't extend, and if it's going to take away from Jim's 20% annual raise, of course Jim's not going to do that. Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. Hey, can I take a quick commercial break? You want to stick around and do a little football?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Let me thank the sponsors. Hang on. And I'm going to give you one to think about, because the Twitterverse is blowing up here. Chronic Hoosier wants to know, Yogi's having his best run of games for an IU basketball player since who? Interesting question. How about we answer that when we come back and do a little football? Does that work?
That works for me.
Like Toto once said in 1984, hold the line. We'll be right back. J&S Locksmith, we thank J&S, and we thank Meineke Car Care Centers for being with us this morning. Meineke Car Care Centers, there are three of them in Monroe County. You pick which one you'd like to stop by and say hi, which one everyone's more convenient for you. Meineke Car Care Centers, again, Meineke.com. Stop there for money-saving offers. We're back with Zach Osterman next. And your forecast for Bloomington here on Friday, January 22nd. 28 in clouds today. Could see some snow flurries, but accumulation doesn't seem to be on the cards. 22 in clouds tonight. Again, could see some flurries, but nothing it's going to pile up. Don't get worried. Tropical storm. That's what we should call it. That sounds better, wouldn't it? Tropical storm Jonas. Winter storm Jonas will affect the river counties and maybe just south of Bedford and Seymour. That's not going to bother us here in Bloomington. It could bother shipping and other things because the eastern seaboard's getting a couple feet of snow. We don't have to worry about that. Sunshine on Saturday, 40s perhaps on Sunday, rain and 42 on Monday. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star joined us in 60 seconds. And we thank Bedford Furniture Galleries. They're on the north side of the square in downtown Bedford. They've been helping people turn their houses into beautiful, comfortable homes for 106 years. They're in business. This is year 107. Whew. Thanks to Bedford Furniture Galleries for making us run this morning. On the telephone with us is our good friend and beat writer from the Indianapolis Star, at Zach Osterman. It is Zach Osterman. He returns for part two on a very busy Friday morning. Good morning. Again, thanks for sticking around. We appreciate it, buddy.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And before we went to the break there to thank our folks for making this program work, the question we had from our internet legend, Chronic Hoosier, was, Yogi's having the best stretch of basketball since whom, or I'm not sure on the grammar there, but when was the last time this happened? And I think it's a good question because the Hoosier teams we saw last year would get started, slow down, and again, never seem to fire or get it going in a consistent stretch. And obviously the 17 and 15 year before that, there wasn't a lot to look back on. So are we looking back to all the way to Eric Gordon, or is Victor Oladipo in that conversation? Where do you think we go to answer that question?
You know, I mean, I think Oladipo had some stretches, and really you have to talk with him as much about his defense as anything. You felt like he could change games with his ability to just kind of lock up and frustrate and smother, you know, an opponent's best player. But and admittedly, I also don't go back to the halcyon days of Bob Knight. I mean, I was only born in 1987, man.
You know who won the Civil War. You weren't there. Come on. You can do a little history work.
I can remember, even with the injury he had, obviously Gordon led the league in scoring in 08. And I mean, he single-handedly beat Michigan State at home.
He did.
In what turned out to be Kelvin Sampson's penultimate game at Indiana. That is, at least at this level, maybe the closest comparison that my memory serves up. But, you know, at the same time, again, with Yogi Ferrell, you don't have quite the defense, maybe, of Victor Oladipo. You don't have quite the offense of Eric Gordon. But I don't remember either of those guys. The assists, the rebounds, the taking over games in the last minute, the feeling that, in general, this was kind of a four-year career building to this point where everything kind of suddenly rallied around one player, because you do also just kind of get that feeling.
Yeah,
that
no
when
question.
He's on the floor, Yogi is in command of his team, that he's communicating well, that they're all following his lead, all those sorts of different things.
I agree with that. I think I
don't know that I've necessarily seen exactly this in the decade that I've been watching Indiana basketball in some form or another.
Yeah, Brian Evans, Calbert Chaney in the early 90s part, just guys that could flat out score and get you 20-something every night when you needed a basket. They would score a basket, and they were on winning teams as well. Winning teams always help this argument. That's why Eric Gordon at the time, Indiana was, what, 19-1, 17-1 at the time. And then, obviously, Victor kind of gets lost because he was surrounded by three other 1,000-point scorers, but that team was so balanced. That's kind of the strike against Victor in that argument, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the thing on offense. I mean, he was obviously, you know, I would say he was that team's best player, but, you know, on any given night, Jordan Hulse could score 20 with a bunch of threes, or Christian Watford could get hot, obviously, if Cody Zeller had openings, you know. I mean, it's almost the same argument. People would argue that Zeller wasn't utilized enough, and I just think, well, yeah, but he's got... There's seven dudes on this team that can score double-figure points. Why are you going to force the ball into any one of them? Just let it happen.
Nope.
But I think that, yeah, as you look back at their legacies, maybe we do forget a little bit how dominant some of those guys could be at certain times.
And that's why that loss was so frustrating to Syracuse, because of all the pieces being in place. But as we move on here, Hoops, noon tomorrow. ESPNU, Northwestern comes to town. Again, Northwestern's had no problem playing games on the road, lost in overtime at Maryland on Tuesday night. But let's talk a little football, too. We've had some new – you had some breaking news to cover last Saturday, just right when the basketball game was ending at Minnesota. Indiana football has introduced a new defensive coordinator and a new strength coach, so a busy week for Kevin Wilson's Hoosiers on top of his contract extension before that. And it looks like this week the recruiting trail is heated up as well.
Yeah, well, and don't forget, I think maybe some of the biggest news, Dan Feeney's coming back. The deadline was this week.
The All-American right guard, that's right.
He's going to return for his senior season. And, I mean, if you talk about a team that, frankly, has taken a lot of, you know, just sort of body blows roster-wise with what it expected to lose, plus a couple guys declaring early, Feeney might be at least – he might be Kevin Wilson's favorite player, if nothing else, and getting him back for a fifth year. I think that makes a statement, frankly, about the viability of Indiana football, because I don't know that, you know, 7-8 years ago when Indiana's going 3-9 and 4-8, if a guy has the potential to go into the NFL, and I don't know exactly where Feeney would have been picked, but he would have been one of the first guards off the board, most likely. I think it says a lot that a guy like that would come back to school, because again, I don't know that
it's not a knock. It's not a knock on Cody Latimer.
Program brings
that's what Cody Latimer did, right?
Yeah. Well, and Kevin Coleman.
Sure. Good point.
And
excellent point.
This year, Jordan Howard and Darius Latham. But I just think that when you get, you know, frankly, I mean, I think it's fair to call Dan Feeney an elite college football player. He's a multiple All-America team selection.
So here's
when you get an elite college football player to return for a fifth year rather than chasing an NFL dream, a dream that is really probably not that far off for him, that speaks to a level of confidence in your program, and I think a level of confidence in the direction of your program. And then obviously, it's going to help your returning a 1,000-yard back still in Divine Redding. You do have other pieces on that line. Dimitri Camille's not going anywhere. Jacob Bailey and Wes Martin, who sort of shared left guard responsibilities, aren't going anywhere. You still got to replace two guys, but you've also got Wes Rogers, you got Brandon Knight, you've got Delbert Baker, you got a lot of options along that line, and it's good to just kind of have that anchoring presence in Feeney.
And again, good in the clubhouse as well. That won't hurt at all. Zach Osterman is our guest. He's the beat writer for Hoosier Football at the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman. And speaking of Darius Latham, he is one of multiple defensive linemen who are not going to return to Indiana's defense. Hoosiers defense last year, a little bit better in some areas, not improved in others, and that leads to a change in the leadership in the defensive side of the ball. A new defensive coordinator, and he's got some holes to fill up front before 2016 gets started.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you're going to see a scheme change. I believe he runs something more like a 4-2-5 kind of situation. So, I mean, obviously, you know, the old 3-4 is going out the window, and we'll see kind of what happens, because, I mean, Indiana's a little bit linebacker heavy right now because they were running that, you know, strong, weak middle plus the bandits position, which I think is, you know, they call it a hybrid. I think it's probably more linebacker than anything else. I mean, I'm interested to see just kind of where everybody fits, where everybody moves around, because you've got some pretty good linebackers on that team. I mean, you know,
and plenty
you
of
want
them.
To find a way to get Marcus Oliver and T.J. Scales and T.J. Simmons on the field as often as possible. Plus, there's Clyde Newton, there's Greg Beach. I mean, there's probably some guys that are going to slide down to defensive end, but it is going to be really interesting to see how Indiana starts to line up personnel-wise in the spring. Who makes the move to end? Are there guys that are going to be able to make the move to whatever you want to call that position, star or, you know, shark, or guys have different terms for that sort of hybrid safety linebacker spot. Are there, you know, who's going to be ready for that move? It's going to be really interesting to see just kind of how all of this shakes out for you.
It should be. Was the change in the defensive coordinator, what brought it along? Because when the season ended, it didn't seem like there was grumbling or rumbling. It was kind of out of left field, and all of a sudden, in the second half of a basketball game, boom, there comes the story that it's a new defensive coordinator.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. And we haven't, I mean, just to say that we haven't been able to speak at length with Kevin Wilson about it. I mean, if you look at it statistically, I think you can probably get at least some understanding.
Sure.
If I was Kevin Wilson, I would like a guy that had worked for Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss, as Tom Allen has, just because that is, I mean, I would not expect to have the number one scoring defense in the country the way that Ole Miss did a couple of years ago. But Ole Miss runs an offense that's not terribly dissimilar to Indiana's in terms of its pace, its tempo, its desire to go fast, its desire to play fast. And when you've got a guy that is comfortable or at least knowledgeable of how to direct a defense on a team where the offense is going to try and execute a lot of really fast drives, you're not going to have, you know, people always talk about like defense in terms of, you know, 8-minute offensive drives to give the defense a rest. That it's really even more valuable because it gives defensive staffs time to really deep dive and cycle through plays and sit down with guys and make adjustments and things like that. That's time you don't have. Adjustments need to be made quicker and on the fly when you do have an offense that wants to go fast. It seems like there's going to be some familiarity with that here. And so I can certainly understand the desire from that level. I don't know if there's anything specific beyond just looking, frankly, at the last couple of years. I mean, Indiana's defense, frankly, regressed last year pretty badly.
The stats will tell you that.
In some areas. And that's, you know, even if it's just 2 years or whatever, in modern college football, usually coordinators only get a couple of years to turn a unit around before they are replaced. And when your unit does not show progress from year one to year two, even if you go to the postseason, I can kind of understand it in some respects.
Last one for you before we let you go here on a busy Friday morning. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star. When is the football signing day? And briefly, what are the Hoosiers' prospects look like? I know it's in February. I know it's close. And they had a really good week, didn't they?
They have had a good week, and just in general, you know, I've always said this is when Kevin Wilson kind of does his best work, is sort of sweeping up in January and early February. There's some guys that they've been involved with for a while that'll be making decisions around signing day, and I apologize, I don't have the date right off the top of my head, but I mean, it's always that first Wednesday in February.
That's the third, then.
Which I think is the third, yeah. But, you know, Wilson has always done such a good job of, I mean, you know, for example, you get a commitment from a player who used to be committed to Missouri, an offensive lineman out of Texas earlier this week. It's not like Indiana just sort of waits to be a vulture, but they have, I mean, that's, you know, Nate Sudfeld was committed to Arizona, and they got him in January because of a coaching change. They were patient with Tevin Coleman. They got him in January by convincing him that they'd let him play running back, which, you know, I mean, the joke is now that nobody else really would, and the joke's on them. I mean, they have always been very patient, and they have always, you know, Wilson even said, I think, whenever we met with him after the bowl game, he said, you know, we always leave some spots open going into January because you want your options open. And, I mean, hey, you know, it doesn't always even work out. Indiana takes Maurice Swain in February a couple of years ago, takes Taj Williams in March a couple of years ago. Those are guys that wind up having to go to junior college. But it gives you the option, I mean, because Maurice Swain is now playing at Auburn, and Taj Williams is enrolled at TCU. So, I mean, that's the quality of those players. You, right. you take chances, and sometimes they don't work out, but, like, what if they had, then you'd have that quality of player in your program. This is always when I think Wilson has done his best work, and his staff as well, even without the bowl game. And you have to imagine that with the bowl game, things are probably a little bit better. I don't think that's going to guarantee. Don't expect to see more four-star commits or five-star commits or whatever. Recruiting doesn't work that way. But I think Indiana, it seems like, has more momentum with the guys that they targeted, because in recruiting, you kind of tend to say, all right, this is a guy we want to get, we think we can get to commit here, or this is a guy we think we can get to commit by this point. There are guys that you target knowing that they're not going to commit until December or January or even on signing day. But it seems like with the guys that they have targeted in that respect, they are closing very strongly yet again. And you have to imagine the bowl appearance is part of that. And, you know, we'll see how.
Well, the bowl appearance and the contract extension, I would assume.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you also, too, talk about, I mean, how do you get an offensive lineman out of Texas who was headed to the SEC? Well, two All-American offensive linemen really help in that respect. I mean, you know, being able to sell Jason Spriggs and Dan Feeney, and Jason Spriggs might be a first-round pick this year, that really, really helps.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to have 1,000-yard backs. It doesn't hurt to have quarterbacks setting records and no sacks and everything else. You put it all together, and the program's on the right path, and I think that's the most exciting part of all this is we have something to talk about in late January. And to be fair, it's not always been the case, and I think that's the step that the Hoosier football program is taking in that right direction. Hey, you got to be at the Assembly Hall in a little bit. We got to let you get going, yeah. Buddy. You got a noon kickoff tomorrow morning against Northwestern. We greatly appreciate your time. We'll do this again, I promise.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Glass.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Big show Friday with big interview. A lot of great stuff in there. If you're a Hoosier fan, either basketball or football, we have it all covered for you. And if you caught us late, don't worry. We will post the entire interview at WGCL Radio here in just a little bit. Bloomington Lincoln's with us every Monday through Friday in the final half hour of the program. Bloomington Lincoln promises concierge customer services, complimentary loaner vehicles maintenance, and car washes, redefining what a world-class experience should be. Joe Smith gets us ready for a big Hoosier weekend next.